The McGraw Show is on the air, live and local. Get in with McGraw now, 314-969-KTRS. From most cell phones, star KTRS. Or toll free, 1-888-550-KTRS. Now McGraw-Millhaven, on the home of the Cardinals and the AM home of the Rams. The Big 550, KTRS.
Jeff Foxworthy from Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader Tomorrow? Willie Ames from Charles in Charge and Eight is Enough on Thursday. Don't miss that one. That's going to be huge. Right now, though, we need to check in with our dear friend Dick Weiss, media critic, longtime editor of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
He's no Willie Ames.
No Willie Ames. No, no Jeff Foxworthy either.
Yeah.
Dick, how you doing?
Great.
You had a good week off. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the colleagues and family of Nancy Miller, who was found murdered in her home out in Chesterfield, who used to work with you.
Yes. Nancy and I go back 30 years, and actually our first few years we worked very closely together. I was a St. Charles bureau chief, and she was a copy editor for St. Charles, and she was a warm, gracious, wonderful person and had a great career at the paper.
And from what I understand, she retired 2-3 years ago?
She, I think just in the last year, she retired, but it continued to write some pieces for the paper. She had a column in the lifestyle section that people loved, the Saturday style section, and it was just about life as it unfolds on an everyday basis.
Right.
Just the little things.
And so she retired. She was still doing some writing around town. She was found murdered in her Chesterfield home. It looks like they found the guy who was a neighbor who was just let out of jail, right?
Yeah, he was he's on probation for a burglary charge, and apparently had been living with his parents, and he's alleged to have committed this crime.
Yeah, that's awful.
So that was very sad, and there is on the STL Today, there is a tribute page that people can offer their comments, and there were about 80 tributes when I last looked last night.
Our thoughts and prayers go out to you and your former colleagues and her family. Speaking of the local newspaper you used to work at, Bill McClellan is getting a lot of press, if you will, about his Sunday column in which he takes to task the company in which he works for.
Yes, you could say that this is one of the great moments for Lee Enterprises in that they allowed this column to be printed because it is a direct assault on their competence. And a very funny column by Bill who mentions that I think he really the overarching theme is that these corporate board elections are really kind of a farce. The candidates are put up. There's usually only enough candidates for the number of seats that there are, and so it was true as well for Lee Enterprises. But he noted that Lee Enterprises, the corporate officers, probably did not deserve their votes, as when they bought the Pulitzer, their stock was selling at $44.55, and now it's under $13. Although I noticed in the last couple of days, it's come up a couple of bucks. At any rate, why would you vote for somebody who had taken the company that far south? He wonders aloud in print in a Lee Enterprises product, and they printed it. And now I know the procedure when this, we have at the Post-Dispatch, I used to be Bill's editor. I like to just say his spell checker because you really don't edit Bill, that there is a no surprises policy at the paper. So if Bill were to write something like this, you would always alert the managing editor, who would alert the editor that this was coming down the pike, and then there would be some thoughtful consideration, and usually the column would run anyway, but everybody wanted to know what was going to happen.
But you can't, as an employer, especially in this situation, cannot come down and slap his hand, pull the column, because then you've just created a bigger issue.
That can be true. But there have been some columns pulled, and it's usually not because the columnist has criticized the paper. It might be for some other reason, a fairness issue or something that's just above and beyond the pale in terms of taste. But there was one, I remember a few years ago, or actually it was many years ago now, that Bill wrote something that so offended Joseph Pulitzer that he wanted something done after. He only mm-hmm. saw it after the fact. And we really thought that Bill's job might be in jeopardy. And we had to come up with something that said Bill McClellan with a subtitle like On His Own, because he, Mr. Pulitzer wanted to make clear that he was not speaking for Pulitzer. So that subtitle ran for a period of time.
Do you remember what it was? I do not remember
what it was, but it had nothing to do with Mr. Pulitzer personally. It had some public policy matter. And I don't think this was one of those heads-up columns. It got right by us. We thought it would be, you know, all that controversial. But Bill has a way of doing this, and boy, talk about a survivor. He's been doing this for more than a couple of decades.
He's an institution.
Yes.
You know, he is an institution. Everyone reads him. Mm-hmm. Now, those people, the Lettermans of the world who made fun of NBC all day long.
Right.
You know, I'll throw a frank opinion in that. An institution who can come in and make fun of anybody and everybody and just, while listening to it, you're like, boy, I wonder what the bosses are saying while they're being vilified. That's what makes them so great.
Right. And he, as you say, he's an institution, and it would be probably worse if they'd done it. And sometimes when columns are censored, they leak out and they surface in the Riverfront Times and other places.
Right.
But this one was a more bald attack than I can remember.
So this was a shot across the bow, more or less.
It looked that way to me.
But they want people to buy the newspaper. And if you do,
that's getting talked about, right? Everybody's going to go read this now.
That's right. And so if you suspend him, if you chastise him, if you take him out of the newspaper, if you retire him, less people will buy the newspaper.
I would presume that as a result of this very conversation, that more people get that gutter cleaning done with the ads that run in the Post-Dispatch.
Tomorrow is Super Fat Tuesday.
Yes.
And no word, we were talking to Claire McCaskill earlier in the show, no word yet if Barack Obama was handing out beads at the Edward Jones Dome, is why so many people showed up at the Edward Jones Dome. However, you're saying there are people in the media who are starting to bring up McCain's age.
Yes. Many things. Well, the thing that's interesting to me is that there's a kind of a narrative in the media about, you know, Barack Obama is a sensation, a rock star, and John McCain's authentic, and so on and so forth. But what I really admire, the journalists who are reporting stories or doing stories that kind of zig when others zag, and the age issue, which really had kind of been put to rest when Ronald Reagan ran. He made a comment, Mondale had, somebody asked Reagan a question, and he said, you know, I will not make this an issue in my campaign. I'm not going to exploit for political purposes my opponent's youth and inexperience, he said to Mondale, and everybody laughed, and nobody was concerned about Reagan's age. Of course, there were people in his second term who thought that the symptoms of Alzheimer's were manifesting themselves late in his term. So age is an issue. And
when he said he really didn't know what was going on during Iran-Contra, we now believe him.
Right, exactly. Now, Senator McCain will be old, if he wins the presidency, will be older than Ronald Reagan was. And, again, they're kind of laughing off this age issue. McCain's got a 95-year-old mother, he says. And, of course, if you listen to actually what his mother says, she doesn't always make a lot of sense. she points that out. But he's 71, and Anna Quinlan in Newsweek made a point of this, that there are professions where you simply are too old. You do not fly an airplane after a certain age. And there are other delicate and important professions where you're simply too old to operate. And the presidency is not one of these professions, she asks. And so that's an issue. The other is Barack Obama has been selling himself on being, you know, not a captive of the lobbyists, and he's gotten things done even though he's a very young age. Well, the New York Times on Sunday did a very interesting piece about a bill that Obama sponsored where he took on the nuclear power industry. Now, the industry, one particular company, had donated quite a bit of money to his campaign, and the bill was diluted over time and actually never passed. And he'd been out on the stump bragging about this bill, and actually at one point it said it had passed when it hadn't, and the New York Times went after him over that. Hillary Clinton talks about saying that it's going to be her presidency and it's not going to be a co-presidency with President Clinton. The New York Times in another piece went after him because he's been currying favor with dictators in Kazakhstan, a dictator who had been condemned by Hillary Clinton and by the Bush administration. And he took a businessman over there to visit with this dictator. And this businessman got $1 billion worth of business, turns around and very quietly donates $30 million to President Clinton's foundation. This hasn't really surfaced as a big issue in the campaign, but whoever gets nominated, you can bet that the opposition is going to look into it
is going to
further.
Yeah. All interesting things. And as much as we think these candidates have been vetted, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Right.
You ain't seen nothing.
Well, it's interesting that so many of the ads that we're seeing on television in our local market now are really positive ads. You don't see too many attack ads, and
right.
That's kind of interesting. And all the phone calls I've been getting, my personal calls I got from Cindy McCain, Mike Huckabee.
Even the personal reporter calls.
Yeah, yes, they're great. They're so nice. They say great things about their candidates. The only problem I have with them is they don't answer my questions.
Yeah. Yeah, hold on a second. Have you been? You've obviously been paying attention to all this. My question about McCain and Romney is this: McCain is now walking around with a little 3x5 index card with a quote that Romney says, "We don't want to necessarily give them a pullout date, but we want a secret pullout." And I'm paraphrasing
right.
here. We want a secret pullout date so that we know when the troops are going to be pulled out, but we don't want to tell the Iraqis when we're going to pull out the other troops. This is a quote that McCain is pulling
right.
Pulls
he reads
out
from it.
Reads
yes.
from his little index card, and Romney keeps saying, "I never said that."
Yes.
Now, how can he say he never said that? He can say, "I said it, but what I meant was this." I mean, the man obviously said it.
Yeah, I don't think he's disputing the quote so much as what he meant. What he said was far different than what the Democrats were saying, because what he would have done was quietly negotiated some kind of benchmark withdrawal date and not told anybody.
Right.
Okay? That's different than having a withdrawal date and telling everybody we're out of there.
No, I understand that. But yeah. McCain keeps saying, look, you wanted a drop-dead date. You wanted a pullout date. And Romney's saying, no, that's not what I said.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost as classic as John Kerry. I voted
for it
before I voted against it,
yes.
which the whole campaign went straight
down. Yeah, it's all context and nuance, and that was the thing that McCain really benefited from, was that he's the one with the reputation for straight talk and authenticity, and Romney isn't. So
right.
when Romney tries to defend himself and says, you're really distorting my record, nobody quite buys it. But
right.
in this case, I think maybe it was a distortion.
Now, one more thing about McCain, and then we'll move on. But I find it interesting that the National Talk Radio Syndicate has been bashing McCain up one side and down the other, and yet it looks like he's going to be the nominee. So how much power do these talk radio hosts have? Really, right? They're minions that sort of fall lock, step, and barrel into who they're going to vote for.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I think that these people have the ability to reach in and get us angry, but not necessarily they can't get us to do a particular thing like vote for a particular person.
Right.
And so if it doesn't play into your anger, if your vote and your anger are somewhat different, then
right.
it's not going to work quite as well. I think it's a great phenomenon.
It's
personally.
An interesting thing to look at. I also find it interesting that the conservatives so despise McCain, and yet if there was no McCain, there would have been no surge. Right? He gave Bush
right.
cover.
He
gave Bush cover for the surge. He also voted for all of his Supreme Court nominees. And I mean, this man is a conservative through and through. And the liberals are like, oh yeah, I like McCain, even though he's a conservative. And the conservatives don't like McCain, even though he's one of them.
Yes, and these liberals are going to have to deal with the very conservative Supreme Court justices that McCain will put on the court.
That's right, right.
And so you really have to think about, what is my vote all about? It's for a lot of things, and it's not just for one thing.
Do you think it looks like the Republicans are going to wrap it up tomorrow if everything goes according to plan? It looks like McCain will be the major front runner after tomorrow. Democrats, however, it looks like this thing's going all the way to the convention, right? Has anybody really thought that far?
I've been watching these commentators on television, and they don't seem to look ahead all that far, because what I would be doing would be sitting down with this. Actually, there's a spreadsheet out now where you can sort through if Barack Obama gets 45% of the vote in California, how many delegates will he get, and then you'd add that to his account and so on and so forth. They ought to be doing that. It's almost too complicated for television because they're it's a spreadsheet with hundreds of cells in it that you have to manipulate. But you can actually, there's a place where you can download that spreadsheet and have fun playing with it yourself. And I think it's just too complicated for television.
What's the best story we've never read?
The best story we've never read is a piece about a guy who was by the name of McCown, who was a wonderful midget peewee football coach in Baltimore, East Baltimore, Aaron McCown. And, you know, these kids did not have, you know, they had single-family homes, and he was like a dad to them or an uncle. And it turns out that he had drug convictions in his background, and suddenly he was removed as coach. And, of course, you know, the flip side of this story is all the parents want him back as coach. Actually,
He was a reformed drug addict. He was back.
Not that reformed, because he was spending some time in jail on a recent altercation. And this is a story about that and why this coach, you'll be conflicted as to whether this coach should be teaching these kids. And these are little kids, like 10-year-olds.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. When, where is it?
This is out of the Baltimore Sun, and you can find the link to that story at weisswrite.com.
Weisswrite.com. WEISSWRITE.com. Thanks, Dick. We'll check in with you next Monday.